The idea of quantum jumping has been a term used in recent years to describe how we all have the potential to shift our reality from a less desirable set of circumstances to one that we truly prefer. But what does that actually mean? Do we really have the ability to craft our destiny? Cynthia Sue Larson, author of the new book Quantum Jump, says that we certainly do. And in this interview, she shares her own insights as well as those in the scientific community who are now yielding to the idea that the quantum reality normally observed from a subatomic perspective can be demonstrated on a much larger scale. This is a fantastic piece of information. Listen in as we discuss how we all can benefit from the process of conscious quantum jumping. We're hearing more and more about the reality of what they call quantum jumping. But, you know, I think many are not quite sure what this phenomenon actually means. I'm so happy to see your book out there now because this really does give the reader an understanding about what quantum jumps are. Could you give our listeners a thumbnail of what this is all about?
Oh, of course. Well, the main idea with quantum jumps is that it's a brand new paradigm and a brand new way of thinking about things. And it's based on the idea that you and I and everybody else exists in an interconnected, holographic multiverse. Hmm. And in this set of all these interconnected parallel universes, we can jump via our consciousness itself from one reality to another. And the reason you might want to do that is to get improvements in your health, in your happiness, in your well-being. So you can be just more effective and enjoying life a great deal more.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that's a big subject, and we've been trying to tackle that for years now. But what you're saying is that quantum jumps is a verifiable process, that this is what's going on anyway. Now we can take kind of conscious control of it, more or less. But before we get, I want to get into that, obviously, and the more practical ways that quantum jumps can be used. But I want to ask you, you know, I guess there have been a lot of advances in the way science is looking at this, the whole quantum universe, in fact. But initially, these observations, very kind of the spooky action at a distance observations, were viewed based on the very small, the subatomic world. But you're saying that scientists are now seeing these amazing effects with larger than quantum objects. How did this happen?
Right. Well, now you're getting to the very foundation of the whole book. So not only am I talking about this multiverse of parallel realities that are all connected, because some people think when you're looking at parallel universes, they're all separate, mm-hmm. and there's no way from one to get from one to another. But like you said, there's a lot of science involved in this book, Quantum Jumps, and that's what I'm so excited to share, because this is where things get really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the last couple of years, well, the last decade, but it's been heating up quite a bit just in the last 24 months, 12 months. There has been literally an explosion of converging science from a number of different areas. And this idea that you're asking about now is the other core component of my premise. So the first premise, of course, let me review it. That's the fact that we're in this multiverse of interconnected parallel universes. The second part of it, of this foundation, is exactly what you asked about. It's my assertion that we are experiencing quantum effects on the macroscopic scale. So what that means is, when you might remember Albert Einstein had once referred to the evidence of quantum entanglement as being spooky action at a distance.
That's right, yes.
Where you can be looking at, you can affect something right in front of you, and then quite a distance away, something else is affected exactly at the same time, as if they're connected. But there are no strings attached, nothing like that. So what I'm saying is, and this seems to be the growing consensus of scientists as well, it's not just me saying this. You're going to hear it from everybody eventually, but I'm just one of the first because to tell you, what happens on this quantum scale does not stay on the quantum scale. So it's very different than Las Vegas. I'm saying what happens on the quantum scale happens everywhere,
mm-hmm.
happening to you and me and everybody and everything around us. We have scientific proof of that. So we have moved from a place of just having this be kind of a woo-woo soft science where we'd say things like telepathy and teleportation and manifestation, these things would be never fully explained. We now have an actual basis for a scientific explanation of what's going on.
Hmm. And this discovery, was it a recent revelation, Cynthia? I mean, there was a process that took place, right? Or an experiment where this was revealed, right? Without getting too scientific, but
yeah,
why now? What?
To be honest with you, like I said, it's been more of a convergence from a number of scientific fields all asking different questions, but bringing together what I would call a body of evidence that's becoming just this chorus and this crescendo, this awareness from so many different vantage points. Number one, that the premise of existing in a holographic multiverse, that is currently the leading explanation for what our universe looks like.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just me saying that's true. This is from proof of scientists who have been looking at cosmic background radiation from the Big Bang, as well as scientists who have been looking at the outcome of the Large Hadron Collider research in the search for that so-called God particle, the Higgs boson,
mm-hmm.
So and a number of other places as well. So just looking at one part of it, the holographic multiverse, looking mm-hmm. like that definitely is what's happening.
Wow.
And then as far as quantum effects happening on the macroscopic scale, we have excellent evidence that this is the case both from quantum biology, brand new field of science that sprung up just in the last decade or two,
mm-hmm.
and also from quantum astronomy. And we're also seeing it in quantum statistics, quantum chemistry. Yes, all the sciences now are being combined with quantum. And this is not just an accident. It's not just me saying so. This is actually happening. And it's affecting everything. So we're coming into what I call the quantum age. I'm saying welcome to the quantum age because it started September 2013 when, for the first time, we had companies that spent $17 million, NASA Ames Research and Google, to purchase the first big, large-scale quantum computer.
That's exciting.
There'll be much better ones in the future. But for now, this is the best that we have on the planet, the D-Wave 2. And it's basically doing what I'm talking about. It's holding simultaneous superimposed states at the macroscopic scale, and they're programming with it. That means we literally have evidence that quantum effects are happening on our human scale, and we're expecting it, and we're counting on it, and people are paying millions of dollars to make this happen and work in their office.
Do you think that these quantum effects happening or being more visible on a macroscopic level are indicative of some sort of a cosmological shift? I try to avoid using that word too much, but again, we know that there's something very, very curious happening with, astronomical effects surrounding this planet. Could it be, I guess we could get into talking about, you know, this quantum reality apparently was always there, but the fact that that science as well as the layperson having these very curious experiences seem to be more overt. They seem to be more out there. Do you think that there's some connection between that reality and the fact that the frequency is rising now or expanding?
Well, that's a good question, and different people from different points of view are going to see that question differently. So, for example, the new age types will be very aware of the frequency change and the fact that they can feel it. They can actually feel, and they'll tell you this, they'll say, time is just changing. Things are speeding up. I can feel that vibration. It's like, it's easier and faster for whatever I'm thinking to come into reality.
Mm-hmm.
It might be good, it might be bad, but like fears are showing up as quickly as what people are wishing to create. But on the other side, from people who just purely are coming at it, maybe from an atheist, maybe a very cynical, skeptical
mm-hmm.
state of mind, you can say the same thing from their point of view, too. And the way that I would phrase it there is I would say, yes, we are experiencing an exponential growth in discoveries of important magnitude. So we're moving toward a very strong convergence into what Ray Kurzweil called the singularity, where there are so many new inventions happening. It used to be that they'd happen every, millennia. Then it was happening, much more frequently, hundreds of years. Now it's happening, much more quickly than that, like in decades or years. Then we'll have massive changes happening every month, then every day, then many, many every hour, spin every second until, I think it's the year 2040 when we hit that singularity.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, yes, you're exactly right. And I'm presenting it two ways so that people listening will not just discount all this and say, oh, that's just people that believe in astronomy or
sure.
astrology. And without realizing, this is happening to all of us, and mm-hmm. absolutely you can prove it's true.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you for sort of giving that, drawing that contrast, because what it says is, regardless of what spiritual foundation you come from, I think most that are somewhat aware are acknowledging that there's some sort of a trajectory in this direction going on, regardless of where you're coming from in that perspective. I mean, you talk about, you know, the idea of time speeding up, and like you said, many of those sort of in the consciousness area or new agey, if you will, are maybe quick to assign that to this raising frequency. And yet I've talked to others who are oblivious to, you know, coming from that perspective, that are still acknowledging, you know, on a very rudimentary level, oh my God, the time is just flying. You know, everybody, no matter what, how they're coming at it, are acknowledging that something's different. So very, very interesting. Well, with this new understanding that we have now about the reality of quantum jumps, it's said, you have said in your book, that we can actually change the past, the future, and the present. Bring in
Absolutely.
Different timelines, literally change our trajectory. How is this so?
Okay, this is the basic premise of the book again. and we're looking at it from different viewpoints, and that's a great thing. So I'm going to start out by kind of repeating what I said, but say it a bit differently.
Okay.
Yes, we absolutely can change the past because there are alternate histories. We don't exist in just one, like you said, timeline. And this is known to be true by our very top minds on the planet right now. That includes Dr. Stephen Hawking, who is looking for alternate histories. He's looking for proof that there were multiple different big bangs at the beginning of this, you know, this universe that we live in. Actually, more like a holographic multiverse, but yes, he's looking for that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very clear understanding by the top scientists of our time. It should be something, and it will be something, that all children are taught. And I believe it will be based on this beginning of the quantum age as of a couple months ago, September of 2013. So, you know, from that point forward, we can no longer say that there's only one sequence of events happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're now using a technology, just like when we drive a car, we can no longer say, you know, that, that man can't go over 100 miles an hour, because we can see clearly man does do that. And we now know that the world is round. You know, airplanes fly off onto the horizon, they go around over the edge, and they just keep going. We have proof of these things. We're about to have proof through our quantum computers that we have alternate histories. We're going to be depending on this technology. We absolutely will trust our lives to it. The fact that we don't just have this world of binary bits and bytes, true and false.
Yeah.
We now have true and false. It's a whole different category.
Yeah.
Yeah, both true and false. And we also have not true, not false.
This is just
kind of logic. And we're going to start thinking that way.
Right.
So this is why it's such a big deal. Even if people say, I don't have that quantum computer, Cynthia. I can't afford $17 million. Are you kidding? No, it's not about the computer. It's much more about the way we need to think in order
right.
to use this new kind of computer.
Right.
Our computers right now are outdated already. This is like the Stone Age we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
We're using classical computers. And the difference is huge. You can see it because when you look at the natural world, plants even are using quantum processes which far outstrip the capability of any of our current technology because they're using quantum processing to do things like photosynthesis. So you can side by side have a photovoltaic, you know, like a solar panel system running next to a plant. That solar system, panel system, can only achieve at top maybe 20% efficiency, taking sunshine and converting it to energy. The plants, and we expect plants to be efficient, but we don't think why. Plants actually are efficient in the high 90%. And so they're taking every single photon and immediately and most efficiently converting it to energy. this is not a chemical process as we used to think. It's becoming obvious, like to quantum biologists, quantum botanists, they're realizing, oh my goodness, these plants are doing quantum processing.
Yeah. Well, obviously, Cleve Baxter's work, who we lost recently, was just, he was a pioneer and really kind of starting to expose that process. But I want to stay on your mentioning of alternate histories. I find this so incredibly intriguing, Cynthia, because the implications of this are just, they're mind-blowing. And, you know, as we approach the 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK, my husband and I have been watching several documentaries, and as we know, there are so many theories about what actually happened, but just in the sense of just looking at what we know, that he was assassinated 50 years ago. Or was he? I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that. Now, this is not, we're not talking about the alive again thing. I want to get into that as well, because that's equally intriguing. But I don't know if it was you and I that talked about this, or if it was a discussion that I heard about, just in demonstrating these multiple timelines and how they can converge. You think of this earth-shaking, planet-shaking event that took place 50 years ago, very tragic. That was the year I was born, 1963, when Kennedy was assassinated. And then you start to ponder, if these alternate histories exist, are we saying perhaps that there's another history in which he may still be alive, or certainly the assassination didn't happen? Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But now, think about it. We need to start looking at it from a natural point of view, because when we get it into something like that, then we start saying immediately, but we never see stuff like that happen. Like, if those kinds of things could be experienced, like a quantum jump to a reality where Kennedy is still alive, then how could we prevent something like a world where Hitler didn't win the war and everybody is now a Nazi, you know? So These are the kind of questions, if people can go right there and get all fearful about it. But, okay, let's back up a minute. What tends to happen in natural systems, they're more like trees. Trees are very wise, beautiful things, and they're intelligent, and I have so much respect for them. So if you look at branches on a tree, for example, we're going to use that as an analogy of branching parallel universes, because they do converge. These parallel universes they sometimes spring forth from a moment that you make a decision. And if you look at it that way, then you realize that from some jumping points, it really is a lot, it takes a lot more energy, it takes a lot more focus to make a leap to a universe, for example, where Kennedy is alive. It's going to be easier to make a jump to a reality based on the decision you made this morning, like whether you chose to have oatmeal or eggs for breakfast. So making those two things could totally affect your whole day, just like that butterfly effect.
I was just going to mention the butterfly effect. I had it.
Yeah, so every little teeny tiny decision you make affects everything else.
Absolutely.
Right? And there's these huge decision trees happening. So going back to something, going that far back, 50 years back, to something that affected the entire planet and the politics and nations, such as the death of Kennedy, that's a pretty big leap. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying it takes a tremendous amount of energy to make a jump like that.
Well,
such a natural process.
Right. I guess maybe I should rephrase the question, and it's a little tricky. I mean, this is kind of a trippy thing just to think about alternative histories and the fact that they may actually coexist. I think that's really what I'm asking, Cynthia, is in one reality, in one timeline, this assassination occurred. And another timeline that although most, if not all, of us here now won't experience, could that timeline still be existing? Or not even now, but let's say 10 years after the assassination in 1973, could there have been another trajectory, another timeline that was playing out simultaneously, even though most of us didn't experience it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
Okay.
Well, all these different realities can exist. That is what I'm saying. And it's mind-blowing, mind-boggling.
Absolutely.
It's bigger and it takes more processing power. If you look at the universe, the multiverse, as being a giant computer, for example, then this thing is so huge and vast that it just beggars the imagination. It's something so enormous that it almost doesn't seem real. you know, even just looking at one simple, small example like this, just doing 50 years is not that big a difference in time.
Mm-hmm.
The world, it's a drop in the bucket in terms of the time scale of the planet Earth. So we're only going, turning the clock back just tiny, short 50 years and looking at a few small variable changes. And I don't know about you, but my mind is reeling. You know, like, oh my.
Absolutely.
There's like hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of permutations just based on this one simple little example.
Right.
We're looking at just a few key characters. But then when you factor in the butterfly effect and the fact that the actions of one person can change the lives of hundreds, if not thousands of people, then wow, you know, this is huge.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is. This all factors into what we're talking about with quantum jumps. I do want to talk about, I don't know if I'm calling this, naming this properly, the alive again phenomenon, as it relates to the subject. These, of course, are individuals, typically public figures, that many people could have sworn had already died, but they're alive again.
Yes.
You and I have spent many hours talking about this. You don't hear it talked about too much, but it has certainly been talked about. And certainly there have been a number of public figures that many people have said, I could swear they already died. What's going on there? Is there any relationship? Is there any teeth to this? Are we imagining this? What's going on with this alive again?
This is absolutely happening. And I've seen personal evidence in my life of it. It's very noticeable if you lose somebody close to you. In this case, it was the cat,
mm-hmm.
who was owned by my roommate. So when that happened and the cat passed away, I was really feeling sad about it. And this is how I know for sure these things happen, because I was feeling like, wow, I didn't even get to say goodbye to that cat. I didn't get, you know, just to have that memorable last experience of being close, because I'd moved across the street. Anyway, so a period of time went by, and then that cat that I knew to be dead showed up in my garden across the street from where it used to live, looking a little bedraggled and so forth.
Hmm.
So in my personal life, I've witnessed this. But then the other place this tends to happen a lot, because I've experienced it, like you said, we've talked for hours about this, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
I've remembered famous personalities like Jane Goodall passing away.
Hmm.
Currently, as far as I know, 2013, she's alive and well. Thank goodness, because I was devastated. In the reality time frame I remember, it seemed so unimaginable, because Diane Fossey had just passed away, and then I don't know, it was just within weeks or maybe a month, then Jane Goodall passed away, also in that reality, also murdered. And I was like, what the heck is going on here?
Hmm.
It blew my mind, and I was very upset. And I just felt like, no, this can't be happening. And then I didn't really think about it anymore. And then years later, it wasn't even on my radar, because Jane Goodall's not a personal friend or anything. Suddenly I'm seeing that she's on a lecture tour, traveling through the U.S., and they have some sort of TV special. And it's not some old thing, it's current. And I said, what? This is wonderful, but what the heck is going on?
What happened exactly? This is really something. I've had the experience myself, Cynthia, you know, not with anyone close to me that I can recall, but I'm thinking of someone right now, Jean Stapleton, who played Edith on All in the Family, who did recently pass, at least in this timeline. But what will happen with me is when I see something like this, when I heard that she had passed, I'm like, I could swear she passed before.
Exactly.
I'd love to stay on this just for a few more minutes.
Another big one that people may relate to is Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela, that's right.
I remember he passed away in prison. It was another moment of, oh my gosh, no, that's so wrong. This is terrible, you know. Like, how could that have happened? This is terrible. I was so upset. And then again, years later, off my radar, I was not tracking it at all. I was not following African politics, nothing like that. Suddenly, next thing I know, he's been out and free for years, apparently. He's alive and well. Like, what? I mean, I was really happy, just like with Jane Goodall. But it's like, you got to be kidding me. Because I remember very clearly how upset I was. And that's interesting, you know, two of these.
What's going on there?
So many more examples than that. It's not just a couple of people. And I think that no accident, that it tends to be people, you'll notice that these are not people that are personal friends of ours, usually.
Yeah.
For this phenomenon to work most effectively, And I'm mentioning this because I get a lot of emails from people, a lot of emails, asking about terrible things that have happened to their loved ones, and they would like them to come back to life. You know, this is a pretty prevalent thing. So as soon as people hear, oh, the alive again phenomenon, great, I want to bring my brother back. I want my boyfriend back. I want my mother back. My brother, my sister, you know, my child. And it seems, I believe these things can happen, but the more closely we're connected to people, it seems like it takes a larger jump for us personally to believe that that can be possible.
Of course.
I think it's doable, but it takes just a huge, huge leap of just keeping that mind open that such a thing could even happen in the first
place. Right, and what you're
and
saying,
then,
I'm sorry.
Overcoming the grief, and because we kind of lock these experiences in when we have huge emotional reactions that we can't even control.
Right.
And we need to get to a place of, like in the book Quantum Jumps, I talk about it quite a bit, disengagement through meditation, through lucid dreaming. And then the other third group of people that are very good at quantum jumping would be the near-death experiencers.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good doorway to go through because it's dangerous. So
right.
I recommend people practice lucid dreaming, practice
right.
meditation. And by those two avenues, you can definitely get to that place of disengagement. Just like when you're shifting gears in a car, you disengage from one gear, one reality, then you go into that beautiful place of being pure energy, pure potential, then you re-engage with a new gear, a new reality.
Mm-hmm. I love that analogy. You've used that before. Well, this brings me to the point, as you speak of the many people who have reached out to you in want of bringing back a loved one, and you make a very good point. You say that really, we're not just observing this quantum potential or this quantum reality. We're integral in what's, you know, how it's shifting. So it takes a consciousness in and of ourselves, and a great deal of discipline, I might add, to be able to achieve this, especially when it relates to a personal experience, right?
Yeah. Now, there are people that can make changes in their personal situations, such as for healing, which I consider to be just another perfectly valid way of doing a quantum jump. So we are always changing our past when we do things like get an instantaneous healing for a, it could be even a very life-threatening disease or ailment, including cancer. And I have examples in Quantum Jumps, the book, about people who have broken bones having instantaneous healings for those broken bones. So when we make that jump to another reality, it can be a very personal matter that we're working on. And healing is very personal. And then I've got examples in the book about life-threatening situations involving close calls with accidents.
Mm-hmm.
As when a car or a vehicle is about to slam into that individual. And it's kind of like looking at that oncoming crash and then suddenly being on the other side of it, as if kind of quantum teleporting or quantum tunneling right through it.
Right.
So sometimes in these personal situations we can do quite well. But there seems to be something about grief and people losing or feeling like they've lost a loved one where it's a little bit harder for some people to get back to that disengagement, detached state of pure mindfulness and pure energy.
Right.
And
of
some
course.
Of the best people at it are these near-death experiencers, like Eben Alexander that I mentioned in the book, and what an amazing story he has about having nearly died and then coming back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that I mentioned in the book is Anita.
Anita Morjani, yeah.
These are amazing real-life experiencers they've gone through what I would call quantum jumps. But we can all access this awareness. We can do it through meditation. We can do it through lucid dreaming. And those are the doorways that I describe and the techniques that I share in the book Quantum Jumps.
Well, let's get into that a little bit. I wanted to ask you if you could give us some examples about how quantum jumps can be useful in our lives and some of the things that we can do to access this realm.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what gets... I'm so happy to share this book, and I think my excitement is obvious because what thrilled me, just like I said, in the last 24 months is all of this science that's coming out, which makes it easy for me to share with the readers about 36 different easy ways that you can make a quantum jump in just a minute or two using a scientifically proven laboratory-tested technique of one sort or another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these things are proven to work. What an amazing day and age we live in. And so these studies are coming from everything from placebo studies, where we now have a brand new placebo studies department at Harvard University, and it's being, this new study of placebo research is happening all around the world right now. I mention that because it's another beautiful example of quantum jumping. You know, basically you act as if you are going to be healed because you had a surgery that turns out to be a sham surgery, for example, and suddenly you can play basketball with your grandchildren, even though you were unable to walk for years due to an old war wound, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Real-life examples from the book Quantum Jumps. So there's that. But the kind of examples and stories that I share, these are techniques, you could think of them, the ones that are laboratory tested and studied and, you know, scientifically proven. These are things that indicate how you can be happier, so you can go out of depression and feel a lot more joy in your life just by doing something as simple as, right now, if you've got a pen or a pencil, put it in your mouth, curl the edges, the corners of your mouth upward, and just sort of hold that kind of a grimacy smile. Just, even if you just do it for 10, 20 seconds, you're going to get proven positive effects from this action. And it may seem like nothing, but if you make a habit of doing this every day, just when you're thinking, you can literally change your mood and elevate it tremendously. There's no downside to drugs or anything like that. And once again, this is one of the 36 different easy, fast techniques.
I want you to repeat that, Cynthia. So, of course, I've got this pen in my mouth. I just took the pen out of my mouth. So you're saying, tell us again.
Your mouth. You may wonder, what's going on? How does this work? This is another principle of acting as if. This is
fake it till you make it.
You may have heard of the American psychologist William James. He's the one who said, if you want equality, act as if you already had it. And that's exactly what this whole field of placebo effect research and positive psychology and, you know, a lot of these other fields that are moving in this direction right now are proving to be true. So this example, again, you can just go ahead and I would recommend a pen if it's clean. You don't want to be putting something in your mouth that has paint and you don't want to bite down too hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's dangerous with pencils. But if you have a clean implement like that, put it in your mouth. Turn upward to the corners of your mouth. You might feel like you're kind of grimacing. You might think, this is not really a real smile. That doesn't matter. And so this works even for people who are feeling kind of angry, depressed, bitter. It doesn't matter what your original mood is. The simple process of doing this action, this is what's so amazing, has an actual effect on improving people's ability to laugh out loud later when they're watching cartoons, to
mm-hmm.
report that they are actually feeling happy. It is a mood changer. And it's just mind-blowing that something is simple and, you know, it's just such a physical thing.
Right.
It has such a huge effect.
Right. Why would you need it?
Why
would you need to put the pen or pencil in your mouth as opposed to just doing a smile?
Well, you could do a smile too, but for a lot of people, you tell them to smile and they won't. But this everybody can do. This is in laboratory conditions. Scientists like to do procedures that they can make sure are repeatable,
uh-huh.
That they work for everybody, no matter how depressed, angry, cranky, bitter, whatever that person may be feeling. So you might be able to tell an angry person to smile, and I don't know, may or may not get good results. So a lot of the studies that I include in here, they were designed for people that may or may not be in a mood to really cooperate, or they might not even want to be going to the place that they'll be going. So,
mm-hmm.
resistance.
So you recommend doing this several times a day, Cynthia, for what, 10 seconds, 15 seconds?
Yeah, and you can, if people already have an easy time smiling and they can remember to do it, do that. But the nice thing about this pen technique is you can do it when you're just sitting down, you know, just checking a website, for example. It doesn't look strange. You can do this on public transportation. You can do it at your desk. Whereas if you just sit around smiling, people might wonder what's going on.
It has
a lot of advantages.
Sure.
Yeah, you can do it several times a day, every time you think of it.
Right.
As long as it's socially acceptable and fits in your context.
I've certainly heard of this phenomenon before about, you know, and we use the term fake it until you make it. But the body, it's an amazing instrument in and of itself. And when you can tell your body to do something like smile, which I'm doing right now, I can't get the smile off my face, as a matter of fact, your brain, I guess, will begin to process the condition for, you know, happiness. So this is, or the nervous system, I should say. I'm not quite sure the chronology of how it all happens, but I can see that. If you can posture yourself in a certain way, sitting up in a certain way, sitting up erect as opposed to hunched over, smiling, or just, you know, giving out a big laugh every once in a while. And I happen, fortunately, to be one who, I love to laugh and I love to smile. So I can certainly see how this could be beneficial. This is fascinating. Give us another example of something that we might incorporate into our daily lives. So we've talked about meditation. What else would you recommend?
There's another big one that's been gaining a lot of, getting lots of media exposure recently. This has to do with what's called power poses. It comes from the research of Amy Cuddy. And it has to do with striking a pose which is expansive in nature. And so by either standing so that your legs are spread apart, putting your hands on your hips, for example, or if you're sitting in a chair, just stretching yourself out, putting one arm off to the side, these kind of things. Mm-hmm. What happens is it gives that person a boost of confidence and charisma, really. So it gives you this whole shot of just positivity that you can then take into any situation. And the effects can last for hours, and it only takes like a minute or two to do the pose. This is useful if you're about to go into court, for example,
mm-hmm.
Or if you're about to go for a job interview, or if you're about to meet someone or ask for a raise, or if you want to be particularly persuasive when talking to people. I mean, the number of times you might want to do this are huge. So this kind of power pose, and there are a number of different ones you can use. I just mentioned several.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have an illustration in the book. I know you've got a copy of it, so if you're holding
right in my hands,
or listening and watching and, you know, they're tuning in, go to page 156, and it's right there. An illustration showing a woman with her hips are, and her feet are about one shoulder width apart. She's got her hands on her hips, just looking forward and smiling. And then there's a gentleman seated in a chair, with his left arm kind of resting on a separate chair off to the side, very
mm-hmm.
expansive. Another thing you can do if you're at a desk, there's an illustration here showing a woman just standing at the desk, leaning over it with both hands on the desk.
Mm-hmm. I see that.
That's a very powerful one. This boosts your confidence even. So if you're a salesman and you need to make cold calls, do this first. You need to talk to someone at the bank, do one of these poses first. You know, it just totally boosts your confidence. There's a couple more illustrations. One was a person, they're sitting at a desk again, this time propping their feet up on the coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
And then another person with their arms behind their head, leaning back on a sofa. So these are the kind of things you can do. Once again, laboratory tested and proven to have a huge, huge effect on both reducing stress, which was measured in the form of cortisol, you know, which is definitely correlated with the kind of you know, feeling like stress. So if you do a low power pose, because this study included both, this would be where you're kind of clasping your arms tightly, crossing your arms, you know, just kind of taking a very small space. If you do that kind of thing, then you're increasing that stress hormone, that cortisol, and it does just the opposite when you are adopting an expansive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This effect goes on and on for, like, you can just do the pose for a few minutes or even a few seconds. The positive effects can last for quite a long time.
That's great.
An hour or two later.
That's something that we can all try, and you know, between that and the smiling,
the reason I call this the science of faking it till you make it is because you do these simple things, and what we're doing, you may wonder, well, how does it, what's going on? And I will tell you, you are jumping into that reality where that is who you are. You're adopting a new set of habits. You're changing who you are. Mm-hmm. You're literally jumping into another reality.
Yeah.
I'm offering the science behind. That's a piece people usually skip over. They just say, fake it till you make it. But why does that work? What is going on?
Right.
I'm telling you, this is why it works. There's a science behind it.
Yeah.
We now know that if we know that we exist in a multiverse of interconnected parallel universes, and if we know that by our consciousness alone we can jump into one of those, and all you have to do is act like you live there, you know, kind of like fit in, blend in, next thing you know, you do live there. And your consciousness has made that jump. You've gone into a state of pure energy, you've landed in another reality, and you're living it. You're living the dream.
Wow. That is really something. So are we quantum jumping right now and just don't realize it?
Yes, I would say we're doing it all the time. And so even though I'm making it sound like, this only happens when you think you're doing it, well, guess what? We are doing it all the time.
Right. But what you're talking about is really taking control and making, and I think I'm going to call the show Conscious Quantum Jumps, because what I think you're saying is that consciousness is the variable to be able to literally make that jump from one situation or one circumstance, one reality to another. And there's certain tools that can ignite that. This is absolutely fascinating, and I can absolutely see why you're excited about it. And I know as long as I've known you, you've been just as excited about the science behind all of these things as much as the anecdotes and the personal experience. So this is a big deal. This is absolutely a big deal.
I know. I've been feeling like I've had to bite my tongue all year while I was working on this book, not able to talk about it until the book was out so I could actually say, here it is. Now you can read it, because there's nothing worse than talking about something you don't have ready to offer. But now we have it. And some of the other stories in the book that I get so excited about are the ones involving teachers and coaches, because these are people who are able to look at the young charges, those boys and girls around them, and be able to see inside each of them the multitude of possibilities, the multitude of possible winners and successes that they can see. And those coaches, those teachers, what amazing, amazing, profound differences they can make in this world. Just
yes.
By helping those young people take time for meditation, get into that state where they go to pure consciousness, engage those young people to realize that they have many possible me's, you know, many possible people inside of themselves, that they can access the one who is fearless, who has confidence,
mm-hmm.
who feels like they can go out there and do what needs to be done.
Right.
And that's what makes these coaches and teachers so amazing. And I've got stories, real-life accounts, including one involving actor Denzel Washington, right here in this book, because it shows this is the difference these teachers and coaches are making on the young people's lives in this world.
I think
that's
amazing.
We can all do that.
Yeah, that is so amazing, and especially because there is unfortunately such a drive to veer people, especially young people, away from that possibility. We need as many, I hasten to use the word heroes, but in this context I will, we need as many of those heroes in teachers and coaches and others to undo what these young people feel, you know, what's possible and moreover what's not. You know, and our mutual friend and colleague, PMH Atwater, whom I interviewed a couple of months ago, talked about the very idea that many of the public schools now are adopting what she calls 15 minutes of silence in the morning and 15 minutes of silence in the afternoon at these schools. And everybody that's on the school premises has to participate. That would be students and teachers and all faculty, anyone that, you know, the cafeteria staff, the janitorial staff, just 15 minutes of silence in the morning and then again in the afternoon. And she says that the records of, you know, obviously the data is showing that there are some profound, in terms of dropout rates, they've reduced dramatically. Scores have gone up dramatically. And obviously the possibilities have expanded greatly because they're taking time out, really stepping out, in, I suppose, in a sense, out of one timeline of what they thought was, and are in that sort of mode of suspense where all things are possible, and they're seeing those results.
That's right.
It's amazing.
I was on the Dr. Robert Rose radio show just the other day, and he used to be a teacher, and he writes for education magazines. He had similar results back, I think, in the 60s and 70s. He was a man ahead of his time. He didn't have the science behind him, but he had kids that were at risk and had they were kind of the rejects of the school, the ones that didn't fit into the regular classroom. You know, they had autism, they had learning disorders. They didn't even have labels for exactly what was happening.
Yeah.
He could take those kids just using, he would do guided meditations with them, and he would talk, and they would start asking, where's our meditation, sir?
Yeah.
And then when he tested them with IQ tests, he showed the school district that within 1 week of just doing meditation and training, he was able to raise every single student in that class from one level to the next after 1 week.
1 week.
Of just,
wow.
Just focusing on mental processing and getting clarity and taking time for that meditation.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing. And that was something that at that time was not supposed to be possible. So there are amazing people out there, including especially educators, who are aware. And it, once again, it's very simple. It's a combination of the tool that I'm mentioning in Quantum Jumps. I'm calling it meditation, lucid dreaming. But like you said, it can be just as simple as 15 minutes of silence twice a day.
Right.
What that enables people to do is move into that place of pure energy, pure consciousness, all possibility. And when they're there, that's when they can start making different choices. That's when you can disengage from a dysfunctional reality where you might have not so good habits and patterns and reactions and move into one where you've got the willpower, the confidence, the intelligence, the ideas, the inspiration to move forward in a positive way.
Right. So, Cynthia, would you recommend as we're, let's say we're deciding to do this 15 minutes of silence twice a day or however long we feel appropriate, are we going into a state of literally visualizing the preferred reality, or are we, you know, in a state of just sort of suspense of, again, all possibility and not necessarily focusing on one particular expectation? How are we handling that? Because there's obviously different gradations of meditation, and I've done several of them where, you know, I'm really trying to just get rid of all of the thoughts and just kind of be in the present, focus on, you know, the flame of a candle, or and not really thinking of anything. Or are we? Are you asking us to really focus on a more preferred result and really bringing that into our reality, if that makes any sense?
Well, it depends on, they both work. There's so many different kinds of meditation out there that's what people may not realize if they haven't meditated much before. They might think that you have to have your eyes closed and be breathing a certain way and have your legs crossed, sitting on the floor, lotus position, with hands in a movement.
Sure, right.
Fingers in a very strange little pose and chanting your mantra. But that's not necessary. So there are about as many different ways to meditate as there are people on the planet. It can be a very individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from walking meditation to doing meditations while clearing your mind of everything. Or you can do a guided meditation. I've got a meditation CD that people use for a number of reasons. It's called Aura Healing Meditations. And even though it's got the word healing in the title, that kind of is the overall idea. It's a reality-shifting meditation. But the words are, they're open-ended enough that whatever it is that you're doing will be improved and assisted. So it's a reality-shifting, quantum-jumping kind of a meditation designed to take you to a healthier, more beneficial reality. And it has the side effect of just basically boosting your confidence and your general sense of well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible to do, even with a guided meditation like that one, get very amazing, varied, but very positive results.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are so many good meditations. And in the book Quantum Jumps, I describe for people how you can choose one for yourself based on a favorite activity, favorite way to relax. Like some people like to take a hot bath. That's a great way to relax. And then you can just combine that with a way to focus your attention.
Sure.
So, voila, you're meditating.
Right.
So I try to demystify the whole process and make it so anybody can feel like, wow, this is something that's pretty easy to do.
Yes, it is. And I think, unfortunately, because there tends to be such a stigma attached to the term meditation that people feel it's too, oh my God, that's way too much for me to handle. I can't do that. I like to call it silence or stillness even. We can call it whatever we like, but the point is to I guess in order to shift reality, we first have to suspend the reality that the reality merry-go-round that we're typically on and move into that no space, stillness. So I think that's key, absolutely key. We have about 10 minutes left, but there are a couple of variations of what we're talking about that I'd like to hit. And one of them has to do with financial prosperity. Yay! Everybody wants to talk about how we can utilize quantum jumps to jump ourselves into a reality of financial prosperity. And again, I think we've hit on some of these themes through meditation, visualization, etc. But let's elaborate on that a little bit. We're in a situation that's not so great right now financially, and we need to quantum jump out of it and into one that's more preferable. How do we do that?
Okay. Well, I've got a couple of pages in the book dedicated just to that. And the basic idea when you're working with money is to recognize that you have got a lot of operating core beliefs. Sometimes they're not very consciously recognized. Like, we don't even know the assumptions that we're running under, mm-hmm. oddly enough, because they tend to be subconscious. And I do have a whole separate book that delves into how to find and just explore those and turn them around. Kind of like fine-tuning your car, and you got sort of like a weird sound in the engine compartment, and it's like making a thumping sound, and you don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like when we have money problems. Like, something's making a thumping sound, and you need kind of to get in there under the hood and fix it up. So, first of all, just recognizing, okay, there may be some internal resistance for each of us having our own ultimate prosperity. I actually see this as the same thing when people are healing their bodies. It's very similar. Oddly enough, some people can be quite good at being healthy, but have trouble with money. And in that case, what I would say is, for whatever reason, that person has some blockages to staying in a fully open receiving state of being, where they feel absolutely worthy to be showered with prosperity and riches and abundance. And so this is something, I think a lot of us when we're growing up, we embody kind of the general ambiance, the thoughts and beliefs around us. And so if, for example, the adult figures who are role models for us are saying things like, well, you got to work hard. And every time they talk about money, they get kind of that peaked, drawn, you know, thin-lipped kind of a face where you can just tell it's stressing them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of money being some fun thing that just comes down and, there's enough for everybody, I mean, we're not usually raised with that kind of a belief system. But if we were, then our expectations would be so very different. Just imagine for a minute that if we were all raised that way, like, oh, money's for everybody. You know, money just comes down when you need it. You always have everything you need.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm saying these things, if you're very energy conscious, you might notice tension in your gut. Because if that's happening and you're feeling it, you're actually feeling the point of resistance where your belief system is different than what I'm saying. So it's another fast way to notice your areas of subconscious resistance to ultimate prosperity. The kind of blockages that you are holding that are making it difficult for that flow of healing energy to just come right in.
Mm-hmm.
That's the similarity that I see when I work with people that are afflicted with, for example, terminal cancer. I've seen people turn terminal cancer around, and the ones that are able to do it are the ones that are able to remove all of their blockages to receiving that kind of healing.
So
same exact thing for prosperity.
Okay.
If you're very good at healing, just tell yourself, wow, I can do that, then I can do money.
Right.
Same thing. If I can get a parking spot where I need it, then I can do money. The same thing.
It's the same dynamic.
Receiving, it's all the same. You just need to tell yourself, hey, I can do one, then I can do all of them. I'm meant to do this. I can receive prosperity in all areas of my life.
So what you're saying, Cynthia, is that the blockages that we will often feel physically, they're centered in certain parts of the body. Would you say that money issues would have a tendency to manifest with physical sensations in, say, the sacral area versus the head? Or, in other words, are there correspondences between the issue that we're having and where the blockages appear?
Well, Well, you can have money blockages in every single area of your body. And that's why if you want to just listen to aura healing meditations, that's meant to clear blockages. It's meant to heal your body, but it also can heal your money problems as well. That's the guided meditation I'm talking about, aura healing meditations. All it does is unblocks all your chakras.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's all you need for ultimate prosperity in every area.
Sure.
You'll be able to get parking spots here. You won't get sick as often. If you did have cancer, it'll just probably clear right up. You know, amazing things can happen when your blockages are removed.
Hmm.
So, and that's the key. That's the most important thing. Once you are addressing those issues, then yes. And I guess if I heard your question right, you were wondering, so a person with money problems, would that always be like the sacral chakra, second chakra issue down there below the belly button? Well, often, but not always. So most people with money issues, you're right, they are holding them at the subconscious level down there. Yes, they are. But sometimes people actually have issues at the head level, at the throat level, you know, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And my book, High Energy Money, goes through that and helps people kind of pinpoint the exact areas where those blockages might be, in case that's a helpful approach. Some people like to know just where is that blockage. Whereas if you use the aura healing meditation approach, then you're letting the meditation just unblock it for you. It's just by, you know, some people like a guided meditation, so that works.
Right.
Other people want a checklist, then my book High Energy Money has the checklist, and then you can turn those difficult assumptions around so that you're not challenging yourself all the time, and instead you're actually practicing the exact mantra and affirmation that you need to open up what had been a blocked area.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've done all that, then in my book, Quantum Jumps, then it proceeds forward, and it's a simple thing, just like any other quantum jump. You just hold the vision of being prosperous. You feel excited about everything coming true for you. So you get that feeling of excitement, and it's almost like my birthday's tomorrow or Christmas is coming. You know, it's that feeling of, oh my God.
Exactly,
yes. Can I believe it? And that total excitement. And then the third step is take some physical action as if everything's coming through. So you just move forward with exactly what a prosperous person would be doing.
Mm-hmm.
A prosperous person would have good financial habits. They would be ensuring that their financial prosperity is in good shape. And they
right.
would be doing things that they need to stay financially healthy.
Right. Yeah. Very important advice. Well, Quantum Jumps, I know that you and I spoke as you were going through the process, even before you wrote the book, certainly, and I knew you were very excited to get going with it, and then we continued our discussions throughout the process of you writing this book, and I'm just so proud of you. Again, you turned out another gem. In fact, I was so proud to endorse your book myself, my friend Cynthia, for sharing this with the world, and you have every right to be excited, and we as well. Because we're seeing certainly quantum leaps in the way we live our lives. So where can we get your book? This is brand new off the press. I think I got one of the first copies. Where can people find it today?
And thank you so much for your endorsement, too. It really means the world to me. And
it was a pleasure.
I feel so blessed and fortunate that it's lots of wonderful people are recommending it, including Larry Dossey and Fred Allen.
That's right.
Yeah. So this book is available both print and ebook version at Amazon.com. People that want an autographed copy can go to my website, which is realityshifters.com. If people have a Nook and they want to go to the Barnes & Noble website, you can get the ebook for the Nook right there at BarnesandNoble.com. And it's also on iTunes as an ebook.
Excellent. You've got it covered. No excuse for anyone to not have this book. Are you going to be doing an audio version?
I hope to. That takes me a little time. I need to catch up with other audiobooks that I've started and not quite finished yet, like Reality Shifts. But yes, I'd love to bring this out in audiobook.
Excellent. I think that would be wonderful. Well, Cynthia, my friend, as always, it is an absolute pleasure. Always exciting to pick up the phone, whether we're just catching up on stuff, you know, offline or doing our interviews together. You're a dear, and I appreciate all that you've done for me. And for everyone out there that has benefited from your wisdom. So thanks so much.
Well, thank you. It's such a pleasure being on your show. And as always, I just love talking with you.
Good Likewise.
For hours, days.
Happy quantum jumping, everyone. We will talk to you soon.
Cynthia's signature question, how good can it get, is what we all need to ask to begin to jumpstart ourselves into a more preferred way of living. Reality is indeed shifting, and now is the time to really harness the process of living in a quantum universe. If you'd like to learn more about Cynthia's work, as well as find out more about quantum jumping, be sure to visit her website, realityshifters.com. Thanks for listening to Conscious Inquiry, a special presentation of Conscious Life News. Thank you.